Welcome to The Art of the Interview with Stephen Adams. Today we're talking to James Hines and Rashid Bahati. Rashid is programming the African Diaspora Program, and he's also on the Downtown Film Festival Los Angeles board, as is Mr. James Hines, who is responsible for bringing in The Jackson 5 in Africa, a film that is much anticipated and unfortunately very, very timely right now with Michael Jackson's unfortunate death. This film has been missing or on ice for about over 35 years and has not been seen since it was filmed in 74. It sheds a fascinating light on Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 and also shows the influence of this trip and how it manifested throughout Michael's entire career. And Mr. Bahati's bringing in some very fascinating films and was also responsible for bringing in Uzan Palsy, who's going to be screening her Aimé Césaire documentary. And Aimé Césaire is the founder of the movement Negritude, the essence of being black, which was a sort of coalescing of the African diaspora from around the world into this coherent cultural movement, and one which is still being felt to this day. And without further ado, let's talk to Mr. Hines and Mr. Bahati. Excellent. Well, I'd like to welcome our guest, Mr.
Rashid Bahati.
And James Hines.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, very well. Why don't we just jump right in, and Rashid, tell me about your role here at the Downtown Film Festival, and then something about your background.
Okay. Actually, I'm on the board of the festival, mm-hmm. and was fortunate enough to be around last year, which was the inaugural year of the festival, so I'm around again this year as a board member. But also, I have been able to, because of my background in film, myself as a filmmaker and a distributor, been able to come into the festival and offer some services as a curator.
Fantastic.
And specifically bringing in African and African diaspora films into the festival.
And you're in charge of that aspect, the diaspora program.
Right.
So what are some of the features this year?
Well, as it relates to the African program,
yes.
We are excited about the Africa Channel coming back again and being a supporter of the African and African Diaspora Program, and under a banner which myself and actually James, your other guest
yes.
here, founded a organization called Afrique 360.
Excellent. So that's the convergence of the two. That's how you two met.
Yes. That and a lot of other stuff.
We're
going to get into those.
We've actually kind of been around each other for a while and on several business interests, but this has been one interest that it's a global concern and as it relates to content from Africa and the diaspora that Africa serves. And so basically, that's where the program lies. And so this year, we're excited about Soul of Ashanti, which is a five-part series that will be on the Africa Channel, which is a national, well, actually they're international, they're in the UK and I think the Caribbean as well, a satellite cable service that provides programming on the continent.
Great. And how would let's do a little sidebar, how would we access that?
Basically through either your local cable, like for example, here in Los Angeles, they're accessible through Time Warner.
Great.
New York City, I think they're in several of the major markets.
So right.
D.C.,
on the
Atlanta,
South, Midwest,
yeah.
East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're kind of all over there now.
What's the viewership like at this point? Do we know?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure, but I think they're probably somewhere in the range of probably 20 million homes
wow.
pass.
Okay. That's
maybe
really
a little
impressive.
More.
Really,
well,
really
for a startup network, I think they've been around probably about three or four years.
A little longer than that.
Okay.
I think they've got some excellent carriage deals in which, you know, how they're distributed.
Yeah.
Mm. There's quite a big African expat audience in North America, as well as African American and other people who are interested in African culture. And I think that's the unique thing about the Africa Channel. They specifically program things that are from Africa. That's one of the main tenets to be on the show, or rather the network.
I love the fact that we're in an era where technology can connect people in a meaningful way.
Right.
Because I mean, when we talk about the diaspora 20, 30 years ago, the diaspora was disconnected in ways that
That's right.
are close. I mean, the gap is closing tremendously quickly. People can learn about history. They can learn about other cultures. They can learn about the cousins, or I mean, the cousinship of all these other nations.
It's no doubt about it. I think one of the things in that we're, again, where myself and James connect is that this whole digital age has leveled the playing field in so many different areas.
Yeah, exactly. And James, you have a background in the world of the digital.
Yeah, yes. New media. I'm actually a musician who got into the other parts of, you know, using new media. I was involved in a video game company in the UK, but how Rashid and I became a working with each other is I had a web company that started out with some of the larger ones here in the mid-90s. And early on, we decided to focus on...
So you were really early on that wave.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty simple, you know.
Because there was a time, you know, as we remember, and it was not that long ago, that Hollywood simply was disconnected from... almost disconnected from technology.
Well, they didn't want shift, I don't think.
It was hilarious.
Because they knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, they didn't want that shift.
Because we can't say names, you know, it was hilarious. I used to take meetings with execs who, you know, secretaries used to turn on their computers. Mm-hmm. That really showed, and these are people who ran, you know, big companies or who, in music and other areas. I mean, these are guys who literally didn't know how to turn on their own technology.
Right. You
know, like, here's the on switch, click.
Yeah.
But that's another
story. And it wasn't being applied in any practical way in the businesses.
Oh, but the funny thing is, as artists, musicians at that time, but we were, technology was always being used, whether it was a Macintosh or an Atari or IBM or whatever. I mean, technology was already coming in from the production level. People were producing or pre-producing using technology.
But of course, music kind of felt the impact of technology earlier.
Oh, yeah, but the web brought it. Like, I remember the day the web went from like gray backgrounds to like color backgrounds.
Right.
You know, it was it just came on like gangbusters.
Wasn't that long ago, but it all seems like ancient history.
Oh
now.
Man, it, you know, and it was all young people. I was the old guy in the room, and I was barely in my 20s. And young kids were, you know, people in high school and college mostly who were just in creating things strictly out of need and necessity, and then just forwarding it around, and somebody else would add on to it.
But you put your finger on it. I think that's what's so fascinating about technology is that it allows individuals to be as creative as they can be.
Uh-huh.
We have all these amazing tools now.
Oh,
it's a beautiful thing.
Oh yeah, innovation was the ticket. But you said something earlier, and I wish you would have chimed in. And that was about, in regards to Africa 20, 30 some years ago, that's how this other project, this film came up, which is, I think we're going to talk about a little later.
Yes, and I'm going to ask you to stop there because I want to back up just a little bit. Let me ask you to put yourself in context for our listeners. Let's hear a little bit about your background and then your role at the festival as well, and then we're going to get to the big surprise in a second.
James Hines, I'm also a board member. This is my first year on it. Last year through Rashid's insistence, participated as a panelist on a few things, but I was excited about what it meant. The festival is sort of, I've described, a Tribeca of the West. It's, you know, it galvanizes much of downtown's revitalization, the arts, which have never went anywhere, and it's given an opportunity to merge both emerging and established artists of all kinds to come together at, you know, a week's or so worth of just great films. But myself, I'm a musician turned new media producer turned independent filmmaker, and you know, I'm excited about what the web means as far as marketing and promoting, you know, all kind of stories out to the world.
And now the reveal.
Reveal is I've been instrumental in working with a great company out of New York called Image Nation to bring out something, the West Coast premiere of the Jackson 5 in Africa. Unreleased footage that was shot in 1974 in Senegal. And the whole idea was, what you pointed to earlier, it was where celebrities, they were celebrities at that time, even in 74, who were going to Africa to create an opportunity to bridge Africa and the Americas. You know, the whole idea was to use their celebrity to engage in investment and tourism and other type of opportunities. It was to put some other kind of faces on Africa back, you know, 2 years before our bicentennial, and you know, which came about 76. And it's amazing, years later, we're seeing still some of the same strides, but we're seeing some of the results.
Yes.
And so we're excited about people seeing some phenomenal concert, which was consciously put together. I mean, when I say consciously, they recorded and performed music that would not interfere with their recording contracts that they had at the time on Motown and such, put did some cultural tours with the local things. Their father and the other executive filmmaker had actually received awards at that time because it was recognized as a business endeavor. These were not their kids' idea. This was, you know, adults recognizing how to use celebrity to create long-range and long-term opportunities. So I'm excited to discuss those things.
I think it's really fascinating. And then what happened to the film? Why is it that we have not seen this?
Oh, this is where it gets interesting. We acquired the film screening from the print. They're coming out here. They're called Image Nation. They're repping the film. Now, they're repping it from a gentleman who bought the film for a rough diamond. Now, this is where it gets really interesting going back. What had happened at the time that the film was made, they ran out of money, so they didn't finish the film. So it sat in somebody's can for many, many years, and then after a while, an unnamed entrepreneur benefactor purchased the print. And then as of lately, the benefactor had contacted Image Nation out of New York to work with them to provide, you know, sales and screenings of it. So it actually premiered once in New York a little earlier.
Is that at the Schomburg Center?
No, it's in Harlem, and they're going to kill me for not knowing the exact name of the facilities. But it's in that whole area.
But it's okay. It's listed on the website. It's on the DFFLA.com website.
Yeah.
If we want the details.
And the filmmakers, or rather the curators of that event, will be out here, Greg and Mokansi. They're a partnership, husband and wife team, who will come out and be Fantastic. Co-presenting it with my company, Heinz Media Group, and others. And I got to say one thing before I forget.
No, but I want the rough diamond. Now, talk to me. How much more can you say about that? This is starting to turn into like a mystery film.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to get more when these guys show up. But the whole idea is, you know, when you see it, you're going to see a lot of, because we only a trailer is available online, and it's been on a different trailer has been on YouTube. But we have some other footage we're going to put up. You're going to see some interesting, great performance pieces, but you're also going to see some telling of story of Africa. It was at how it was viewed at that time. Mm-hmm. What was viewed as, you know, interesting, we may view today as propaganda.
Yes.
And it's narrated by, you know, the phenomenal Robert Hooks, which is a director and actor himself. And we're reaching out to persons who were involved in the film to hopefully be involved in our presentations here, as well as music fans.
Amazing. So 35 years. And then this was found, tragically, not too long before Michael died.
Right. Yeah. It was already involved in being screened in the New York on East Coast area. And as a matter of fact, after our West Coast premiere, it's going to be really pulled off the shelf because the intent was to really do other things with the film, whether it's some type of restoration. And when I say that, because it was shot on 16mm, which was the state of the art for a non-studio film at that time, you know, using 16.
Right, but 35 years is a long time.
Oh, yeah, but it looks phenomenal.
Great.
The parts of it. It's got that feel. You know, there's some dropouts. And
But I think that adds to the flavor of the artifact.
And also Michael and other members of the band were talking. They're doing some of the narration, so it's not totally just, you know, Robert Hooks narrating, and then you go into some great concert performances, which are there. But you're also looking at various members of the Jacksons doing some narration themselves about what they're feeling at that time.
Wow. It's going to be fascinating. And it's interesting because I know that Michael kept, had a relationship to the continent until he, you know, for many, many years. You see it in his work. You see it in the They Don't Care About Us video. You see it in even the sample of Want to Be Starting Something. He has Mano de Bongo in that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that trip obviously kept on resonating throughout the career.
Well, throughout the Jacksons and particularly yes. Michael, you know, musically they did a lot of things with the continent, and I think it also inspired the early entrepreneurship in the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Marlon Jackson at some point had what was that the venture out of Atlanta, Rashid?
The Black Family Channel.
Yeah, the Family Channel. So he got involved in some things that entrepreneurial that were about better programming for, you know, better purposes, period.
Right.
And then I think that very award that his father had received at the time, Michael was given that award 30-some years later or 20-some years later.
Wow.
Which I couldn't tell you the French or the African name of it if my life depended.
Was it Legion d'honneur or was it?
Oh, no, it was probably not. No,
now
I can lose the accent. That's about it.
Hey, and switching into French, Aimé Césaire. We have the film with Ozan Palsy.
Absolutely.
Who's going to be present, which is wonderful. Mm. That's really a lovely and amazing treat to have Ozan
well,
here.
Well, this is, I mean, I'm totally excited. I had the opportunity of meeting Ozan Palsy like in around 2004 in Cannes. And one thing that myself and James have done over the years, we go to Cannes International Market, film market, and we present awards to key people. We've done Melvin Van Peebles,
Danny Glover,
just recently.
All these little nobodies.
Yeah, I get it. Just recently, the Malian filmmaker, Suleiman Sesi, from Mali. So Ozan was part of that, and we feel very honored that we have another opportunity to bring her, showcase her here in Los Angeles. So this is a very exciting opportunity for us.
Now, she's a wonderful filmmaker. I mean, amazing range. I mean, from what she's done with the Dry White Season, I had the pleasure to see.
Yeah.
I mean, and that work, the work that Brando did in that is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And she has great stories about Brando, too, which I won't spoil because she must tell them herself. But they're tremendous. And then I recently got to see a screening of her French miniseries that's set in the 18th century.
Well, actually, that's the film.
Is that the film that
we wanted initially?
Mm.
And there were some challenges with bringing that film. So the Aimé Césaire film, to me, is profound within itself.
That's got roots in a million different directions. And
yeah, and we're showing just one segment. It's a three-part series, that particular film. And so we're showing one aspect of it, which deals with the Harlem Renaissance. And we're really excited about
that. Because that was like a stone that dropped and had global resonance. I know that that work was introduced in Paris, and then, you know, the connections began in that way, much more slowly than the digital age that we're talking about now,
right.
But all the same, it's fascinating to look back at, you know, the impact that simple readings of work that was happening in one area had in another place and became a global movement.
Yeah,
and I guess in a sense, here we are today because of it. Négritude was actually an attempt to recapture a word and to give a positive meaning to it and to pull the entire definition of blackness out of negativity and into something positive.
Yes.
And that's unfortunately still a struggle that we're dealing with to this moment. But we'll look at the bright side, and there's a reason why this programming is important. Tell me some more about the other films. There's do you have something with Pancho Sanchez, too?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other side of the diaspora for us, that you know, the festival has a Grammy film series, and within that series, we're doing a special film, Pancho Sanchez, and live at Montreux. Mm-hmm. And we're excited about that, and Pancho will be present as well. And he is just, I think, at the epitome of what you would call Latin jazz. And we're excited about having him come. We're going to show the film. The director of the film will be there as well. So that will be on August 20th at the Grammy Museum.
Beautiful. So you've been busy.
Yeah, very busy. But, you know, this stuff is so rewarding because I think the festival this year is just so many.
It's very
well, it's essentially doubled in size in 1 year, which I think is remarkable.
And it's very music driven and very diverse. Aside from Pancho Sanchez, there's Bill Withers with his
Still Bill.
Right.
At the other end, there's Beethoven piece, which is going to be a great piece.
And then we have the Spike Lee version of Passing Strange.
That's the opening night.
We were just talking about it. A New York Times gave it a great write up.
I can't wait.
We're hoping it gets phenomenal reviews with us here.
And of course, Stu has the local ties, which makes it all tied.
Did you say that in French? What was that?
Which was
Stu's? What he did in, I think it was Ze Negro Problem.
Oh, the Negro problem.
Yeah.
problem.
La problème nègre. So,
Love it.
So it's interesting. All these different strands, and they have a lot of interrelationships. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and then, you know, also the centerpiece film, Reach for Me, with Simon Cassell.
Yes.
And Afri Woodard.
Right.
It's going to be a profound piece.
Right.
And the festival is honoring Seymour Cassell.
Who was the coolest and the most legendary.
Yeah, I'm looking at this photo.
I mean, that picture. I mean, if I could only be half the man that I'm seeing in that photo.
Check that.
We should all be so lucky. Mm-hmm. The guy is just dynamic.
So the festival has so many jewels this year. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and Sustain LA, it's involved in a lot of other areas that are not film centric. It starts off, but have film intermingled, because film is part of messaging. So there's a lot of video messaging that kind of ties the whole 9-10 days together, and we're excited. And also the excited part about it is bringing new people to the festival. We think we have an opportunity with this music driven program to get people who ordinarily are not festival lights to come out and just hang out and see things and meet people.
Yeah, no, Greg and Greg Batasik and Henry Priest, I mean, should give their full names, describe the music festival in detail, and I mean it's just unbelievable what the opportunity is.
Oh yeah,
I mean people will. And I already see, and I shouldn't say this, but I know that the sales are already very good. Because the word is out and people are very excited.
Get your tickets now.
Get your tickets now. DFFLA.com.
Yeah.
If you're smart.
Yes.
So tell me more about the collaboration of the two of you.
Well, we started out initially when I was in the web business, mm-hmm. and Rashid was still doing documentary film and also teaching at a high school level here. And I'm going to pat myself on the back. He said he was semi-impressed with what I was doing at the time.
Semi.
And
well, it was actually more than semi. I was totally impressed.
But we had a string of wonderful opportunities to make things new media. Together we did maybe about a couple of Spike Lee projects. The most significant was Four Little Girls, in which that particular piece, as it did its television broadcast, we did the new media campaign, which involved everything from getting Spike to do a web conference while he was on the East Coast. We had kids on the West Coast at House of Blues, to going out and taking some of our cash, which I'm still mad about that, and going to Alabama, the Civil Rights Museum, and cutting our own footage to complement what was taking place for the education market. But together, American Black Forum in New York, or D.C. rather, remember the television show? We went out there. We had and what we did is the television show, they did a four-part series on how technology is going to affect us at the 20th century, because it was 1997 at the time we were doing this. So we tied that into the web and participated in the outreach. And what we recognized early on was I got involved in the web by working with some A-level companies who really brought all music and film to the web, period. They started out as a small concern, but they were the most experienced and the most talented, and they did. And so while they were bringing film, TV, and music to the web, we made a conscious decision to go after the black counterparts who may have missed this boat. And we were very focused on finding projects that had a broad audience or a large domestic, and saying, hey, let us work with you to really give you a footprint in this web space at that time. But we also incorporated some early 3D chat rooms, a ton of webcasts of all flavors, and had a lot of fun. We traveled.
No doubt.
In every trade show possible. That's where I was saying earlier, at one point I saw more of him than his wife.
Yeah.
That's funny. Hey, now, Rashid, talk to me about this. I always hear this truism that, that black films don't play outside of the United States. And you're telling me that you've spent a lot of time on the international circuit. So what's your take on that?
Well,
and what do you think the source of that thinking
certainly,
is?
Certainly it's a misnomer. And the reality really is that black films do play, quote unquote, out of the domestic U.S. market. And that's where I actually see the largest opportunity. I mean, of course, the U.S. is standing, bar none, one of the largest markets. However, there are other opportunities outside of the states that can be just as with the level of potential that the U.S. has. For example, I don't think on any level Hollywood has exploited any of the product coming, that would be quote unquote black product going any other territories around around the world. They haven't exploited it yet. They only look at, say quote unquote the low hanging fruit.
Right.
And other than that, nothing's happening. So when you look at territories like, say, Brazil or West Africa or East Africa or
even Asia. I mean, Asia buys a lot of the music product, and now you put a face on it, and you're going to say it's going to sell less. That's crazy.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
So the opportunities are huge opportunities.
So we're just saying that maybe it's just something people are accustomed to here, and they haven't leapt over that. I know there's stories about how Will Smith at the beginning of his career with Bad Boys insisted on premiering at Cannes, and that was the foundation of him having an international visibility.
Oh, I got a Will Smith story real quick. When I was involved in new media, we were looking to animate Felix the Cat. I actually was working with a wonderful group from the UK and some guys from Canada, and we were one of the rights holders for Felix the Cat. And we were going through a list of people to play. And Will Smith at the time, he had that Cheshire Cat look. And the most amazing thing is, the project kind of fell through because people didn't believe that Will Smith, the black guy, was known enough to carry the product. And what really brought it home for me is one of the filmmakers, who was Canadian, talked about how his daughter knew Will Smith, and as Jazzy Jeff, as part of the Fresh Prince, as the artist as well as the music guy. And so we think we had an opportunity very early on to break Will internationally, because I think at that point he'd only done a lot of television and a lot of music, but hadn't done anything theatrical. And this was a piece that, all the resources were there. There were big companies sitting at the table, but they just didn't see this, this black guy carrying this iconic piece of animation and making it come to life. But everybody who was creative did.
Yes.
But, but today Will writes his own ticket.
Will Dominic. He is astride the globe right
Willinator,
now.
He's
arguably the biggest movie star in the world, which is tremendous. Although I can say, and not to keep going back to Paris, I can remember even in the 80s seeing people lined around the corner for Eddie Murphy movies or Whoopi Goldberg movies.
Well,
so I knew at an early age that was not true.
If you took a look at any of the statistical data around theatrical releases, and look at those releases with Wesley Snipes, Passenger 57, or any of those types of releases over the years, these actors have box office appeal. They sell all over the world. All these territories that you would think that we're not selling, they're selling.
Right.
And so it's a misnomer.
Well, I think Hollywood has a certain level dollar. There's a certain dollar mark they wanted to see. Now, so let's be clear. The idea is not that black films don't make money. They knew they make money. They just didn't think all the time they would make the type of money that they were wanting to or project for their other type of films. But again, the Will Smiths and the franchises that Wesley and other guys
and Sam Jackson
and
certainly
Gail and girls have done,
plays
women
everywhere.
Rather, they've proven that black themed film can make a difference at the box office.
Excellent. So let's bring it back to the festival. So what else can you tell me about your participation here, and what else we can see?
Wherever they corralled me, I know you're talking to both of us, but I don't think we mentioned any of the AT&T or the other galas that we have going on, or workshops.
You're saying parties. We all want to hear about parties.
Parties. Please. Everybody wants parties, party, party. Yeah, all great films will have parties attached to them. Check it out on the web. But aside from that, even the thing that I came in earlier, Roger, one of the curators here,
Roger Mayer,
he's putting together this 3D thing, which had to beat him up in a board meeting, but he became such a champion. It's funny. And so there's going to be all kind of great information that ordinarily other film festivals wouldn't carry. And this is a very diverse
town. And
again,
3D, we're on the edge of technology
Independent.
Once again, we're back to that technological strand that's running through this whole festival.
There you go.
But we're also inviting a lot of music people to come out, to celebrate the film. It's not the 90s anymore, where the type of music videos were made like they were used to be, and I don't know whether that's good or bad, but
they don't have the budgets in order to occupy the place they did in the 90s. That was definitely the heyday.
There's more independent, but there's more artists. There's more video on the web now, and and festivals are going to be a great way to expose people to the whole notion, to the whole process. So come to the DFFLA.com and learn.
That's
blah,
it.
Blah.
So we're coming to the end of our show. Is there anything else you guys would like to tell anybody, people who are listening out there?
Well, you know, this is just, you know, this whole downtown Los Angeles piece, as James characterizes it.
Tribeca
of the West.
Can I get away with that?
If we I think you can. It's a complimentary analogy.
But I think, you know, if you really just stand back off and look at this, I mean, the growth downtown has just been tremendous over the last few years, and the people that are aggregating downtown, and the festival seems to be right on time for this new growth in the Los Angeles area, especially downtown.
Oh, yeah. We're actually using it to launch some personal projects. There's some that are music driven. There's a young lady I'm working with. She is a drummer, used to be for Hilary Duff and for a ton of other female fronted bands. She and a television writer, you know, they've got a project called Behind the Beat, which the whole idea is to use film and music to encourage more musicianships, particularly women, and to get involved, and girls to become musicians and such. And then Rashid is the FAQ, which is you said Festive Freak, right?
Yeah,
but we should tell them what Festive Freak is, like at least the URL.
FAQ.
Yeah.
360.com.
Yeah. You know, we're going to be launching some VOD stuff from there, you know, hanging out with camera crews, which we just learned there's going to be camera crews hanging out.
Yeah,
this whole
I understand
time.
It's going to be camera crews all over the place.
Putting it on the web, RSS.
Great. You
know. All of that stuff is exciting.
Yeah.
All that stuff is
exciting. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot, and I cannot wait to see what you're doing down here. I mean, in terms of the curating, and we'll talk again.
Look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right.
Alrighty.